Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Delisa Williams, and I'm your faith-based community nurse, and we're in the trenches again, talking about health and wellness. I hope and I pray that you have been blessed, that you have remained well and healthy, that you're tolerating the heat that we are experiencing, and that you're keeping yourself well hydrated and as cool as possible. And we're going to be talking, I had partially introduced the subject on last week, but we're going to get into our topic for tonight. First of all, our scripture is coming from Matthew 11 and 15. He that hath ears to hear, let him hear. And so tonight, I want to do a little bit more in-depth information on colon rectal cancer. We did, I think, a few weeks ago about the GI system and how it works and its function to help the body to get the proper nutrients, as well as expelling those things which are not necessary for the body to retain. One of the reasons that I have decided to bring this subject up again is because there has been a lot of recent information that is being advertised on the television, a lot of commercials. Now, this is a topic which we have been pushing for years, practitioners, when we talk to our patients about the risks and the things that need to be done to decrease your risk. So we've talked a lot about a preventive care. We've also talked about care that has been that needs to be done in the event that during a screening or diagnostic process that can be done early to prevent an advanced stage of the disease. We want to talk tonight about colon rectal cancer. Recently, there has been a resurgence of incidence of colon cancer, and as one of the most preventative cancers, it has become a matter of increased importance. This is a very preventative cancer, doing the right things, doing the appropriate monitoring, can give you a more positive outcome. Also, doing early detection can also promote a more positive outcome. Just recently, it was stated that this cancer is diagnosed in 25% of black men and women, and it has a 35% death rate in that group of people. And so it's very important that we be ahead of the game and do whatever is necessary. As with anything that's going on with us, we have to be more cognizant of what we can do as individuals to prevent, diagnose, and actually have appropriate care regarding this disease. Colon rectal cancer is a disease where the cells in the colon or the rectum grow out of control. Sometimes we just say colon cancer. Sometimes we say colorectal cancer, because you hear about the screening as colorectal screening. As we discussed before in the previous episodes, the colon is the large intestine or the large bowel, and the rectum is the passage that connects the colon to the anus, which promotes bowel movement. Now, we discussed in the previous topics that your nutrients are actually absorbed in the small intestines, and then the colon gets the residue of what is not needed stored in it, and of course it is excreted through the rectum, through the anus via the rectum. So anything that the body does not need after you've eaten food, it's stored in the large intestines, so it can get rid of, it gets rid of all the excess, the toxins, and whatever else is necessary that is no longer useful to the body. Sometimes these abnormal growths are called polyps. They can either form in the colon or the rectum. But over time, some polyps may turn to cancer. Screening tests can find polyps so that they can be removed before turning into cancer. Screening also helps to find colorectal cancer at an early stage when treatment works best. And I did have, and I brought this up before, I did have a young man that we tried to get him to do the screening, not necessarily a colonoscopy, because there are different types of screening you can do before you actually have to have a colonoscopy. And he was just set against it. Oh, I don't want to do that. And, you know, people have this conception, ooh, it's awful, and we've made it as easy as possible. But he finally did agree to do one. I kind of, every time he would come in for an appointment, I would bring this up, and I would give him the kit. He finally did one. He had to go for a, because it came back positive, then they have to do a diagnostic colonoscopy. And when they did it, he did have early stage of colon cancer. It was contained. They were able to remove it. He didn't have to have anything else done. So that's why it's so important to do the screening, because it does help to not only make sure that there's nothing there, but it can also find if you have polyps, have those removed, or if you're in the early stages of colon cancer when it is treated early, and it works best if it's treated at an early stage. There are risks to getting colon cancer, and it does increase as you get older, but can be people that have inflammatory bowel disease, such as Crohn's or ulcerated colitis. These are this also increases your risk. A person who has family history of colon rectal cancer or colorectal polyps, of course, this puts them at a higher risk. Genetic syndrome where there is a familial or family history of adenomatous polyps or hereditary non-polyps in the non-polyp policy that is in the colon rectal cancers like Lynch syndrome. So you have a lot of things going on. Age, it increases with age. Anybody that has IBS, a lot of people have IBS, could be Crohn's or ulcerated colitis. If you have family history, you have a genetic predisposition. But what we have found out that lifestyles factors that can also contribute to the increase of colon rectal cancer. And they are like a lot of things that we've talked about in the past, a lack of regular physical activity, a diet that is low in fruits and vegetables, a low fiber, and a high fat diet or diet high in processed meats, overweight and obesity, alcohol consumption, and tobacco use. These are other factors that are lifestyle that contribute to colon rectal cancer. And lifestyle can have the lifestyle factors are things that you can change. Some things you don't have control over, like the ones that I mentioned before, but you do have control over lifestyle changes, like getting more exercises and increasing your fruits and vegetables, eating a high-fiber diet and decreasing your content in your diet. High amount of processed weight and obesity, and of course alcohol and tobacco consumption. So these are things that we can change. So what are some symptoms of colorectal cancer? And be advised that sometimes people really don't have symptoms. Okay. But some symptoms that will bring you to the doctor, and I've seen these, where you are having abdominal pain, aches or cramps. It may be symptoms of colorectal cancer. Well, if you have symptoms that worry you, you need to see your doctor right away. Now, colorectal polyps, which is abnormal growths in the colon or the rectum that can turn into cancer if not removed, and colorectal cancer does not always cause symptoms, and that's the first thing I said. Sometimes it does not cause any symptoms. Some people can have polyps or colorectal cancer and not know it. That's why it is important to have research, because sometimes it can be asymptomatic, and then sometimes you can have symptoms. Now, I have a private patient, and he had a history of diarrhea for over a month. And so we had to find out what was going on, because even when you have diarrhea, you cannot keep taking K-O-peptate or any anti-diarrhea medicine on a long-term basis. We really had to get to the culprit as to what was happening. Now, this patient has a lot of anxiety. So, of course, my mind went to, you know, he's anxious, he's agitating his gut, but I couldn't leave it there because the symptoms had been there so long and the anxiety was not new. The other thing that happened with him that some days he would go without it, but then other days he would go all morning or some days he would like go all night, or some days he will maybe have 3 stools and some days maybe 5 stools. Abdomen did not seem distended. So because this was a chronic problem, we had to do something to find out what was going on. So, which brings us to the next. If you have symptoms, it can include a change in bowel habits. You can go from diarrhea to constipation, a mixture of both. And a lot of times we see this with IBS, because you can have IBS-C, which is IBS with constipation. We can have IBS-D, which is irritable bowel syndrome with diarrhea, or you can have the mixture. So anything that changes, if you see blood in or on your stool, some people that have hemorrhoids, they'll say, oh, my hemorrhoids were just bleeding. But, again, we cannot take it for granted it's just your hemorrhoids. The other thing is to know that you can have blood in your stool and you can't see it because it could be in the stool, and the only way we pick it up is through a microscope. You could have diarrhea, constipation, a feeling that your bowels are not empty all the way. Again, abdominal pains and aches or cramps that don't go away. You can have weight loss and you don't know why. Okay? So a lot of these, you can have a lot of these symptoms, but please remember, and this is what they're advertising, do not wait to see if you have symptoms. Also, prevention is worth a pound of cure. Do the screening. And so we can't, you know, you can't always count on this. So in the patient that I had, the doctor was a little bit, and he is my gastro, and he was very, very, very thorough in doing the different tests. But the first thing, because this patient had not had health care for 9 years, the first thing he wanted to do is to check the upper GI part. And so what they'll do is what we call a EGD. And an EGD is where they actually go down the down through the throat and follow the GI system all the way to the small intestine. That's where it stops. And so they want to make sure that the upper part of the, there's no problem in the upper part of your GI system. And they're looking for esophagitis, which means there's an infection in the esophagus. They're looking for issues in the stomach to see if there are ulcers or diverticulosis or any other kind of problems that will go with the stomach. And then they look for anything in the small intestine. Luckily, when we went for this particular test, we knew he had a hiatal hernia. But, you know, those are just diet control, not eating late at night and laying down, things like that. But he did have diverticulosis, and he did have ulcers. He had no idea that he had ulcers, but he did have ulcers. And so what they did is they put him on medicine for the ulcers as well as
for the diverticulosis and, of course, put him on what we call an anti-reflux nutritional plan. So when we're talking about colorectal cancer screening, we're talking about tests that actually look for the disease when a person doesn't have symptoms. If you have symptoms, we know what to do. But for a person that doesn't have symptoms, then we want to do a screening just to look at if there is there a disease. Really, when we're talking about colorectal cancer, almost always it develops from a precancerous polyp. That's why when they go in and they're just doing a regular screening of colonoscopy, they see polyps, they're going to snag those and take those out. Now, they do send them also because most of the GI people know if their cancer's not because they've done it enough, but they still send them for testing just to be sure. So what they do is when they do the screening colonoscopy, if they see those, they remove them before they return into cancer. And then also during the screening process, they can find out if there's any screening. The recommendation for regular screening now has been decreased to beginning at age 45. Now, bear in mind, this has nothing to do with people who have history of polyps or people who have family member who have history of polyps or colon cancer. This is just a normal screening for the average person who has no symptoms, no family history, not predisposed for colorectal cancer. But they do this because it is the key to preventing colorectal cancer and also to finding it early. The U.S. Preventative Service Task Force recommends that adults aged 45 to 75 be screened for colorectal cancer. Adults 76 to 85, then, of course, you would talk to your doctor and see, you know, what needs to be done. They also recommend several colorectal screening strategies, including stool tests, flexible sigmoscopy, colonoscopy, and CT colonography. And one of the easiest one is actually the stool test. When should you start getting screened? Most people should begin screening soon after turning 45, and then they need to get screened at regular intervals. There are times you may need to be screened earlier than 45, or there may be times that you need to be screened more often. A lot of it has to do with what you have. If you have IBS, or like I said, irritable bowel syndrome, such as Crohn's or ulcerative colitis, if you have that family history, if you have any genetic syndrome, those people need to be screened earlier, and they need to be screened more often. Think you're at risk for colorectal cancer, you should always speak to your doctor and ask him when to start screening, what test is right for you, and how often you should get tested. There are several ways to get your screening done. A colonoscopy is just one of several screening tests for colorectal cancer. And what you need to do is you really talk to your doctor and let him make the decision what one is right for you if you're between the age of 45 to 75. And again, you talk to him if you're 76 to 85, because that has to be made on a individual basis. People that are at increased risk of colorectal cancer should talk to their doctor soon. Don't let it go. Start talking right away. One of the things that is very easy and simple to do to screen for colorectal cancer is what we call a GWAC-based fecal occult blood test, okay? It just, there's a chemical that you use to detect blood in the stool, even if you don't see it. Usually this is done once a year. It's a very simple test. You get a kit from your physician, and they give you instructions on how to do it. It is an at-home kit that you use. Now, we use what we call the FIT test, and this is like a little small bottle. We give you everything you need. You take the top off. When you have a stool, you put a little in there, tighten up the lid. We give you a plastic bag to put in, and we give you a pre-address and stamped envelope to send it back in to the doctor, and that way, it takes a lot of the hassle out of you bringing it to the office, because a lot of people really did not want to come back and bring it. So this makes it very easy. We send it to the lab, and then they look at it and they determine if they detect antibodies to detect blood in stool. And this is also done once a year. There's a lot others out there. Like I said, we use the FIT, which is the fecal immunochemical test. But there's also ColorGuard. You see the little man running to the mailbox. That is another one. Now, it's just your doctor's preference, but everyone should have a baseline colonoscopy. One of the tests they do before that is done is a sigmoidoscopy. For this test, the doctor puts a short, thin, flexible lighted tube in the rectum, and the doctor checks for polyps or cancer inside the rectum or the lower third of the colon. So that can be used. It's usually done every 5 years or every 10 years if you do a FIT test or some type of stool sample every year. The biggest is what we see right now is the colonoscopy. It is similar to your sigmoidoscopy, except the doctor uses a longer, thin, flexible tube to check for polyps or cancer inside the rectum and the entire colon. And the, like I said, this is what they do the most of. During this test is when the doctor can find and remove any polyps that he sees. And if there's some cancer, he can remove some cancers. Colonoscopy is also used as a follow-up test if anything is unusual that is found during your other screening test. What we would do if a patient did a FIT test and it was positive for blood, we did a diagnostic colonoscopy. No questions asked. It may not be anything, but because you didn't see the blood, but we found it in your stool, they typically go ahead and do the colonoscopy. It's usually done every 10 years for people who do not have an increase for colorectal cancer. But again, your doctor decides how often this needs to be done based on your health, your history, and all these types of things. One thing that, and I did go through the private patient that I have, had to have a colonoscopy. I do like the way that they are now doing the prep. If you've ever had a colonoscopy, you had to drink this jug of gook, and I never could finish it because I would throw it up, and that's the danger in that. But now they have tablets that you do, and I like the way it's done. You have two bottles, and each bottle has 12 tablets, and they have a container in there that has measurement for 16 ounces of water. Wonderful. And so what you do is you start taking those tablets, one every 1 to 2 minutes, and you just sip water with it, and you do that until you take all 12. The water that is left, you finish that up. That's 16 ounces. And then an hour later, you do another 16 ounces. You don't gobble it down, but you do it over the course of 30 minutes. Then the next one, I think it's 30 minutes or even over an hour. And then later, you'll drink another 16 ounces, and you do it over 30 minutes, and that gives you 48 ounces of fluid. That does not include what you should be drinking anyway, because you should be on a clear liquid diet. And then at 10 o'clock, you repeat that process, but after 12 midnight, you don't eat or drink anything. The only thing that my patient had to do with a few sips of water is take his blood pressure medicine, because they do want your blood pressure in control. So to me, this is a whole lot better than drinking all that goop and taking all, you know, you drink the goop and you take all the pills. And so, but a lot of people don't like this. They've refined it quite a bit. You wake up quicker. Recovery time is so much better because of the type of sedation that they're using now. They have somebody, of course, monitoring you during the sedation, but you wake up. I know the one that I had, I woke up and picked up my conversation from where I had left off. And so it's much better now. Each test has advantages and disadvantages. What you do is you talk to your doctor about the pros and cons of each one of those tests and how often it should be done. And again, which test you use is dependent on your preference, your medical condition, your family or personal history, your genetics, the likelihood that you would get the test done, and the resources available for following up. My patient did not want to do the colonoscopy. I did not give him a choice. It is, you do the colonoscopy, or I am no longer your private nurse, because I already knew that he had issues with his, with the ulcers. So I had to find out what else was going on. And, of course, I think I can do the prep. Yes, you can. You do the prep. It's simpler than what we had to do in the past. He ended up doing it, went well, perfect colonoscopy. Does not have to have another one unless he has symptoms. Okay? So, you know, it's important that we get these things done. Then there are things that you can do to reduce your risk of colon and rectal cancer. People that are screened early and the cancer is found and they're treated early, they are alive because that early detection was done. The most efficient, overall, the most efficient way of reducing your risk of colorectal cancer is to get screened for colorectal cancer routinely beginning at 45. Now, everybody should have a baseline colonoscopy at that age. If you don't do it right at 45, it should be done really shortly after that. You need something baseline because you'll need something that the doctors can refer to, okay? The other thing, which is biggie, is what you eat. What researchers are trying to do right now is find out if changes to your diet can reduce your colorectal cancer risk. Medical experts often recommend a diet that's low in animal fat and high in fruits and vegetables and whole grains to reduce the risk of chronic diseases such as, coronary artery disease and diabetes, but this also helps to reduce your risk of colorectal cancer. Okay. Let me read the healthy choices, and let me tell you why we're pushing food changes. Some studies that have been done suggest that people can reduce their risk by increasing physical activity, the things that I talked about, keeping a healthy weight, limiting their alcohol consumption, and avoiding tobacco. In 2020, the latest year that we have any available data, in the United States, they had 1,603,844 new cases of cancer that was reported, and 602,347 died of the cancer. For every 1,000 person, 403 new cancer cases are reported, and 144 people died. Cancer is considered the second leading cause of death in the United States. It's only exceeded by heart disease. One in every five deaths in the United States is due to cancer. Risk is higher in African Americans. It is higher. Colorectal cancer is disproportionately affects the black community, where the rates are the highest of any racial ethnicity group in the United States. African Americans, about 20% more likely to get colorectal cancer and about 40% more likely to die from it. The reasons is very complex. But they feel like they're largely reflect the difference in the risk factors and in healthcare access, both of which are related to social economic status. Most African Americans are disproportionately burdened by cancer in general. They often experience greater obstacles to cancer prevention, detection, treatment, and survival, including systemic racial disparities that are complex and go beyond obvious connection to cancer. These obstacles can include lower-paying jobs and lack of health care insurance, even lack of accessibility to health and affordable foods, and low quality education and housing, and unsafe environment. And so you see, they're bringing out a lot of issues which can affect the African American ethnicity, which makes them disproportionately predisposed to colon rectal cancer. I agree with this to some extent. I think if we as African Americans would learn to change the way we eat. I'm not saying we're the only ones that that eat the way we shouldn't, but we really, please, I'm not against McDonald's. I like their French fries, and I like their hot fudge sundaes. McDonald's, Burger King, Jack's, a lot of these fast food places. It's not that you can't get something healthy there. It's that we choose not to. We choose a hamburger and French fries. And, you know, I've told you, if you're going to get hamburger, load it up. Tell them I want lettuce, tomatoes, onions. Take out a lot of that ketchup that you're using. You know, get the pickles. Load your sandwich up with vegetables. I know that when I would ever go to Subway, that I would always load my sandwich up. They have the meat, but I would load it up with spinach and onions, you know, tomatoes, peppers, just all kinds of vegetables, cucumbers. And that way you're eating, but you're eating healthier that way. Now, before I close, I want to explain to you why they're pushing the physical activity and the food, high in fruits, vegetables, fiber, and low. And beef is one of the worst because it really, beef does not break down very well, period. Okay? What you want to do is if you eat high fiber, lots of fruits and vegetables, drink plenty of water, and lots of activity, this promotes good bowel movement. What you don't want waste material to do is to stay stagnant in your colon or large intestines. You want what is not necessary for the body to use to be expelled from the body. The longer it has the ability to produce bacteria, which can then be worse for you. So we always tell people, eat high fiber, lots of fruits and vegetables, drink plenty of water, and move. A lot of people say, well, you know, I stay clean. The first thing I ask them, because most of us do not get a lot of fiber, and I ask them, are you eating foods high in fiber? Are you eating lots of fruits? Are you eating a lot of vegetables? Are you moving around? And what we see a lot of times when we go in the nursing homes or elderly people that are in their home, they have a lot of problems with constipation, and that's because they're not moving around a lot. And a lot of times they're not really drinking a lot of water. And, you know, sometimes the food is not the type of food they need to promote good elimination. But It's very important that you eat hyper foods. And before I close, I'm going to give you just a few because, I mean, you can Google it. There are lots of things. But bananas is high in fiber, black beans, raspberry, almonds, chia seeds, broccoli, love it. Sweet potatoes, love it. I try to get me a sweet potato, some sweet potatoes and bake every week or two. I even like the, if I'm going to, buy frozen fries, I buy sweet potato fries. Apples, we all know that is good. Avocado, love avocado. Lentils. Blackberries, good. Split peas, artichokes, not my favorite, but, and oatmeal, love it. Love it. And what these do, as well as whole wheat bread, Brussels sprouts, kiwi, zucchini, pear. So you can see it's a lot of good stuff. Navy beans, pumpkins, red kidneys beans. Pistachios, green peas. So you can see what there's a lot of things that is really good for promoting high fiber in the body. So what you need to do is, we can just change what we're doing and it gives us a better chance of not developing colorectal cancer. And definitely do your screening. And that is it for me tonight. If there's no questions or comment, I am going to sign off for tonight. So want you all to be blessed. Hope this information was informative. But the reason I'm doing this is because I'm seeing more and more commercials because we're having this high rate. And we've got to kind of break this cycle for all of us. No matter what ethnicity you are, the cycle needs to be broken. A lot of us, when I go out to eat, I always order a salad. That's my norm. And a lot of times when I get the salad, it's going to decrease what I eat. Everything else I eat, so I bring the rest home. So a lot of times when people go out, if you go to a buffet, fill your plates up with vegetables. And you're not like me, but I do suggest that sometimes when you go out, get the dessert, get fruit. Let your fruit be your dessert. That's what I do. For my dessert, I get fruit. I put fruit on my salad. I may get veg, but I also use fruit as my dessert. Sometime every now and then, skip the dessert and get fruit, and that will help you, okay? All right, so I'm going to sign off for tonight. You all be blessed, stay healthy, stay hydrated, and stay cool. Have a good evening.